Hi, Ollie. Yeah, I'm fine. It's been a bit of a hectic week. I was at Cheltenham on Monday night for their FA Cup tie against Everton, and saw Villa lose at Bradford in the League Cup on Tuesday night. So it's been all go off to Wolverhampton tonight to see their game against Blackburn. It's busy at the moment, as you know, in the English season.
Very busy indeed. Talking of that Aston Villa game against Bradford in midweek, what's been the atmosphere around the camp, both leaving that game on the Tuesday night and also in the pre-match press conference? Has it changed at all? Is there a bit of a renewed spirit in the Villa camp?
I think that's very fair, Ollie. There were definitely a lot of stunned people at Valley Parade on Tuesday night, from the fans, the players, to even the manager. And Villa's actually started that game very well and looked as though they would coast towards victory, but ended up losing 3-1, as you know. And there were a number of, there were poor set pieces. Bradford, a League Two team, three divisions below Villa, looked like scoring at one stage with every attack. And it was a shell-shocked young Villa side in action. I mean, it has prompted a lot of questions, such as, is the team too young? But after the initial shock, that's given way to optimism that Villa can turn this around. Gabby Agbonlahor, who I spoke to after the final whistle at Bradford, felt that last time they reached the League Cup final in 2010 against Blackburn in the semis, they'd come from behind that night at home in the second leg. And he felt Villa could do the same against Bradford in the return. But of course, they've had to put the League Cup to one side now because they're in a massive relegation fight. Southampton visit Villa Park tomorrow. Saints' form's picked up a bit of late. They've struggled a few draws together. Villa have been struggling, as you know. So it's a huge game at Villa Park. I'm going, looking forward to it. The fans want a home win, but this young Villa team hasn't, I think, for six league games now since their trip to Anfield.
We've seen Lambert mix around with his formation, this 4-2-3-1 that he played against Bradford with Benteke on his own, and the formation we saw against Liverpool with the three centre-backs, two wing-backs, three in midfield and two up front. Which do you think Villa play better as?
Well, you're right, Ollie, that he's still searching for his best team, isn't he? I mean, I thought offensively going forward at Bradford, for the first 20 minutes with Nzonzi in a free role behind Benteke, they looked very dangerous, and it was a good formation to get Nzonzi and Agbonlahor in the team and give Villa some pace, but it just left them too open at the back. The two holding midfielders that night, Bannon and Delph, couldn't stop the sort of Bradford surges on the young Villa defence, who were cruelly exposed. So it's almost got to come up with a bit of a blend between both formations, I think. I like the look of Villa going forward, but they desperately need to shore up the defence and get a decent quality holding midfielder in. I mean, if you want a little snippet of it, of gossip, Ollie, I was at seeing Paul Lambert today, and he did say that they're looking for a strong new centre-back and a strong holding midfielder, so he's aware of the problem.
Is that, in looking across the Midlands to West Bromwich Albion, somebody like a Malumbu and a Jonas Olsen then is what Lambert feels that Villa need?
Yes, I mean, those two would definitely walk into the Villa team now, but you and I know that's not going to happen. They're at the Hawthorns for the foreseeable future, or if they leave, it certainly won't be to Aston Villa. But you're right, that they'd be ideal, actually.
What about, just quickly on West Bromwich Albion, they play Reading this weekend. Shane Long returning to his old stomping ground. Do you think there'll be a few butterflies in his stomach going into that game?
Yeah, but he might be sat on the bench, right? Because Lukaku's done so well for the Albion of late. I'm not sure Long's going to start that one. But he's been a key player for West Brom this season. Adds a bit of pace and a goal threat up front. I think he won't have any regrets about leaving Reading for Albion, though, because obviously got him out of the Championship and his career's kicked on at the Hawthorns. Earlier this season, he was even linked with Liverpool, wasn't he? So he must be doing something right.
Two losses on the bounce for West Brom against United and Fulham. Not so bad, except for the Fulham game being disappointing. Going into Reading, it's got to be a must-win three-pointer, surely?
Yes, I agree, Ollie. Everyone's been raving about the Albion this season, but it would be such a shame if they didn't keep up the momentum from the first half of the season. No one wants to see their campaign fizzle out after so much promise, particularly new rookie boss Steve Clarke. So I understand he blasted them a bit after the Fulham defeat. And he'll definitely be looking for a response in that game. And I expect them to win that. Reading looks like going down.
James, you are the mirror's man in the Midlands when it comes to football, but you can't avoid the talk about Liverpool, Manchester United and Arsenal, Manchester City this weekend. Do you think this Liverpool-Man U game means more to the Liverpool fans than it does to United fans, especially as they're now behind in league titles, behind the Red Devils and also the underdogs in this?
Yeah, I think you're probably right there. Of course, United's rivalry with City has also preoccupied much of their thoughts in the last 18 months. I know Paul Scholes maintains that Liverpool will always be their biggest rivals, but City won the title last year. That hurt at Old Trafford. That really stunned them. And we all know they're desperate to get the Premier League crown back off their arch rivals next door, which is City. So I do think the Liverpool-United rivalry, personally, isn't quite as significant as it once was, when they were both, you know, competing for titles themselves. But it is still a huge game, particularly, of course, for different reasons, really, with United going for the title and Liverpool really almost playing for pride and Rodgers trying to push his new-look side up the table and justify his position.
And there is that big gap between the two sides in the league table at the moment. A lot of experts saying that form and league possession go out the window in these big rivalry games. Do you agree with that, or do you think this is a game that United should be comfortably winning?
I agree with you that United should win it, but you certainly get some bizarre results sometimes in these huge derby games, don't you? And I remember when City went not so long ago to United and smashed them on their own turf, and no one saw that one coming. It does throw up a few real shocks, and I think actually Liverpool have raised their game against United, certainly at Anfield in this fixture traditionally in the last two or three years, even though they've been sort of some way off United in the league. So I'm sure it'll be a cracking game. Hopefully many of your American fans will get to hear about it. But don't ask me to predict the score.
I don't think anybody's going to be wanting to predict the score for either that game or Arsenal against Manchester City. City going in, they've really kind of seemed to find the City of old from last season. Do you think they've got enough against an Arsenal side that's shaky with all the transfer talk and contract talks going on still?
Yeah, City seem to have the bit between their teeth, Ollie, at the moment. I saw them at Carrow Road just after Christmas, I think it was about December 29, and they ground out a very impressive win there, despite having Nasri sent off. They had the look of champions about them that day, and I think it's going to be a fascinating title race, because I expect City to get up a bit of head of steam now, get on a roll, and start winning these sort of crucial games, such as against Arsenal, to really put the pressure on United, and hopefully we can have a similarly exciting finale to the season as last year, because I think that would thrill everyone, including the press and the fans, but perhaps not the managers and their heart rates.
I don't think Ferguson at his age is wanting too many more title finishes like that, that's for sure, James. The Sergio Aguero missing this game, though, he's arguably the only City forward that gets in the press for all the right reasons consistently. With Aguero gone, how big a loss is this against Arsenal? Is it really a point that they can capitalise on?
You're right, that is a loss for City. He's undoubtedly one of the most skillful and influential players. But I must say, I think Edin Dzeko is much underrated at City, probably because they've got so many talented stars. I saw him get was a hat-trick at Norwich, even though it officially only went down as two goals and an own goal, if you know what I mean. But he can step up, and he's enjoying his start. So perhaps him and Tevez can do the business against Arsenal. I'd certainly would fancy them for that game.
And would you, if you were a manager, would you be giving Mario Balotelli another chance, especially after if you're his manager, he's kind of grabbed you by the collar midway through a training session?
Well, you know, we're all talking about Balotelli on a daily basis in England. I don't know if people around the world find it as fascinating, but he's such an enigma. Everyone's interested in him here in England. Personally, no, he wouldn't be in my squad. He's too much of a loose cannon. Setting off fireworks in his bathroom and doing all sorts of mad things. I know he's young, and he can grow up, and we all did a few daft things when we were younger, but I think he's had too many chances. He possibly, when they use the phrase, has a few screws loose. I think in Balotelli's case, it probably is indeed a fact. I wouldn't have him in my squad, but I quite enjoy watching his antics, his latest haircuts. I think he's in the press today, Ollie, with a blonde mohawk or something. So that's another week, another hairstyle.
Yeah, it's another story for Mario Balotelli. Do you think he makes an impact at all? Do you think Mancini plays him in this game? Because he has had, on occasion, risen to the big occasion.
Yeah, but he's so enigmatic. Equally, there have been times where he started him. I think it was actually in the Manchester derby. And, you know, he felt like taking him off after half an hour or half time because he's been so useless. You just don't know what you're going to get from the guy, do you? But Mancini knew that, presumably, when he bought him because he'd worked with him before at Inter. So, really, Mancini can't grumble because he knew what he was letting himself in for, or must have done.
And Arsenal will know exactly what they're letting themselves in for with the champions of last season coming to the Emirates. James, it's an absolute pleasure to have caught up with you for a brief 10 minutes or so here on WFD. Fantastic to have a chat with you, and we look forward to getting you back on again in the future, mate.
Yeah, a pleasure. Good luck with the show, and Happy New Year to everyone. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Happy New Year to you, James. James Nursey there from the Mirror joining us here on World Football Daily, taking us through some of the headlines coming out of the Premier League here in the early part of the show. Fantastic to have a chat. James, one of the top men around the Midlands football grounds, and always enjoy a good chinwag with him in and around the press box when we are lucky enough to be at the same game.
We know you love that free bit from us here at WFD. Now go and sign up and get access to a huge archive of our content and interviews and download the best daily podcast in America. Go to worldfootballdaily.com and become a member today.